What would you sacrifice to stay true to your vision? In Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, we meet Howard Roark, an architect who stands at the edge of a cliff, naked and completely at ease with himself. This opening image captures the essence of the novel's protagonist, a man utterly comfortable in his own skin and unconcerned with social approval. When we first encounter him, Roark has just been expelled from architecture school for refusing to design buildings in classical styles demanded by his professors. The dean offers him a chance to return if he'll conform, but Roark calmly refuses. "I don't intend to build in order to have clients. I intend to have clients in order to build." This statement encapsulates the central conflict that drives the narrative, the battle between creative integrity and social conformity. Throughout the story, Roark faces poverty, ridicule, and professional ostracism rather than compromise his modernist vision. He designs buildings that express their function honestly through their structure, believing that what can be done with one substance must never be done with another. While others copy Greek temples and Renaissance palaces, Roark creates structures that grow organically from their sites and materials. Peter Keating embodies the tragedy of external success at the cost of self. Rising in architecture by pleasing others and following conventions, the handsome, skilled Keating undermines colleagues, steals credit, and secretly relies on Roark for difficult designs. His tragedy lies in his moments of clarity. Alone with fiancée Catherine, he acknowledges his boss is an old fool and a pompous fraud, showing he recognizes mediocrity yet continues seeking approval from those he privately despises. After winning with Roark's secretly provided design, he feels a dark, nameless feeling when praised for qualities he knows aren't his. As Keating advances, his dependence on others' opinions destroys his happiness. He abandons Catherine for Dominique Franken's social connections. His final degradation comes when he begs Roark to design Cortland Holmes, confessing, "Howard, I'm a parasite." By the novel's end, he has gained external success, but lost his self-respect, artistic potential, and capacity for joy, a warning about living through others. What if you believed greatness couldn't survive in a mediocre world? This paradox drives Dominique Francon, the novel's most complex character. Beautiful and independent, she recognizes Roark's genius immediately, but believes the world will destroy him, so she attempts to destroy him first as an act of mercy. Dominique's newspaper column deliberately mocks things she admires. She values freedom to ask nothing, expect nothing, depend on nothing, using detachment to shield herself from a world she sees as corrupt and unworthy of greatness. After meeting Roark at a quarry, Dominique undermines his career while paradoxically praising his buildings in ways that turn public opinion against them. She claims the Enright House should be dynamited rather than exist in an unworthy world. Her self-destructive marriages to men she doesn't love punish herself for loving Roark. Dominique's journey toward accepting that greatness can survive in an imperfect world mirrors the novel's larger argument about individualism triumphing over collectivism. Don't set out to raise all shrines, you'll frighten men. Enshrine mediocrity, and the shrines are raised. These words reveal Ellsworth Toohey's strategy. Outwardly a humanitarian critic championing the common man, Toohey secretly works to destroy excellence. What makes Toohey terrifying is his self-awareness. Unlike typical villains, he knows exactly what he's doing. He tells his niece to stop wanting anything and kill the ego to achieve happiness. To Peter Keating, he admits, "I've never had any desire to be loved. I want to be obeyed." Toohey demonstrates how collectivist ideologies operate, not attacking greatness directly, but undermining it through manipulating language and values. His architecture book claims great buildings aren't created by individual geniuses, but are condensations of the spirit of a people. He promotes mediocre talents while ignoring innovators like Roark. His goal is power over people's souls, creating a society where independent thought becomes impossible as conformity becomes virtue. Gail Winans's tragic journey examines whether one can control the mob without becoming its servant. Rising from poverty to become New York's most powerful publisher, he embodies both the American dream and its corruption. His newspaper thrives on sensationalism while maintaining a facade of moral crusading that he privately despises. Winans's complexity stems from his self-awareness. His yacht bans his own publications, and his private art collection features works contradicting everything his newspapers champion. This duality shows his understanding of quality, making his public pandering more tragic. Winan believes he can harness the mob's base instincts for power while privately appreciating excellence. When he attempts to defend Rourke, aligning his public power with private convictions, everything collapses. His staff rebels, readers abandon him, and he realizes the mob controls him, not vice versa. In his final confrontation with Rourke, Winans admits, "One can't rule innocent men. When there aren't enough criminals, one makes them." His tragedy illustrates the futility of seeking power without principles. Compromise demands ever greater sacrifices until nothing of value remains. A house can have integrity, just like a person. This captures Rourke's revolutionary approach to architecture. For him, buildings express human consciousness, where every element serves function rather than decoration. Unlike peers who copy historical styles, Rourke begins with purpose and sight. He studies terrain, light patterns, and surroundings before designing. For the Monadnock Valley Resort, he creates houses following the landscape's natural contours, structures that seem to grow from the earth while maintaining precision. His Stoddard Temple celebrates humanity's connection to earth through its low profile, clean lines, and strategic natural light, inspiring contemplation through honest expression of materials. Through Rourke's work, we see true creativity isn't narcissistic self-expression, but problem-solving according to objective reality. He discovers what each building wants to be. As he tells the jury, the creator stands on his own judgment. The parasite follows the opinions of others. The creator thinks, the parasite copies. The creator's concern is the conquest of nature. The parasite's concern is the conquest of men. With these words, Rourke articulates the novel's central theme. Productive achievement toward mastering the physical world represents humanity's highest calling, while seeking power over others corrupts. Throughout the story, collectivism appears as committees diluting vision, manipulative media, and social pressure punishing nonconformity. Against these stands Rourke, who refuses group projects, simply declining to join Architects for a World's Fair by stating he would only work alone. The novel portrays collectivism as morally wrong for subordinating individual judgment to group consensus. Through Tui, we see collectivist ideologies gaining power by instilling guilt about personal achievements. The climax comes when Rourke dynamites Cortland rather than allow his design to be corrupted, an action presented as justified because creators have the right to protect their work. His acquittal represents the novel's philosophical resolution. Individual rights are paramount. The Fountainhead endures through its celebration of productive work as noble. Rourke's commitment to creating structures that serve human needs while expressing potential reminds us that making lasting things is deeply meaningful.